A reading from the book of Luke. And behold, a lawyer stood up to put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." But he, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" He said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." May God bless this reading to our hearing and understanding. Thanks be to God.
Take away the melodies, take away the songs I sing, take away all the lights and all the songs you let me write. Does the man I am today say the words you need to say? Let them see you in me. Let them hear you when I speak. Let them feel you when I sing. Let them hear you. Just let them see you in me. Who am I without your grace? Another smile, another face, another breath, a grain of sand flowing quickly through your hand. I give my life an offering. Take it all, take everything, and let them see. Let them hear you when I speak. Let them feel you when I sing. Let them see you. Just let them see you. Let them see you in me. Let them hear you when I speak. Let them feel you when I sing. Let them see.
Wow. That's what I leaned over and said to Kathy after the choir, too. I mean, my word, what beautiful music we are graced with today. Yeah, absolutely. I should have known, coming into Hollywood, I'd have some act I would have to follow that can't be in any way duplicated. That was really stunning. So, but thank you for welcoming me. All the same, and thank you also for this dedicated year on compassion. I loved seeing that banner as I was driving through in front of the church, and it's what our world needs, it's what our society needs, it's what our church needs. I'm very grateful that you all are giving yourselves to this very important way of being in the world. And I'd like to share a little bit about my takes on compassion through the Good Samaritan story. So a number of years ago, actually this was before cell phones, so we're talking ancient history here, I was working with a number of under-resourced communities using stories and drama to help reflect on the conditions of our society and mobilize young people to be agents of justice and transformation. And I was asked by the Episcopal Church to be the keynote speaker for the annual clergy conference that was being held that year in Palm Springs. And I said, great, I would love to. How about if I actually bring some of the young people that I work with and we will demonstrate the work that we do as part of the keynote presentation? They said, terrific. So I got about 6 or 8 young people from South Central Los Angeles where we were working. We rented one of those church vans and we made our way out to Palm Springs. Now, all of us know there's only one way to get to Palm Springs from here, right? It's on the 10 freeway. You just do a straight shot out there. We get out past Redlands and we're in the middle of all that desert area where there's nothing for as far as you can see. And wouldn't you know it, but thump, 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 we get a flat tire. We pull over, it's a church van. We're tearing it apart, there's no jack in there. There's a little beaten up tire for a spare, but there's no way to get it on the car. But it was okay, because as we're standing there, I look out, and on his way to the conference is the Archbishop of the Episcopal Church. And I'm waving him down, hey, Archbishop! But he was so focused on the conference, he didn't even see us, and he drove right on by. But that was okay, because behind him was the head pastor of the flagship social justice church in the Episcopal Church in Pasadena. George, hey, he was so focused on the conference, he didn't even see us. He drove right on by, but it was okay. The High Steeple Church of Beverly Hills, the pastor, the rector was right behind him. I'm waving her down. She passes right by. Every single priest in the diocese had to go to this conference, drove right on by us, and not a single one of them stopped. And honest to goodness, about 30 minutes later, here comes this truck battering down the freeway. The bed is packed with probably a dozen of Mexican day laborers. They see us. They pull over on the side of the road. They don't speak English. I don't speak Spanish. They see that there's a problem. Oh, no problema, no problema. A couple of them bring a jack out of the car. Another one brings out a soccer ball. They're kicking around with the young people. They jack up the car. They replace the tire. They take it down. They get back into the car, truck, start to, hey, let me pay. No dinero, no dinero. Vaya con Dios. And they take off. And I look at these young people and I said, do you know what just happened? And they said, yeah, we got a story to tell. So we come up to the conference. We're just a few minutes late, but we're throwing this all together. And we said, get up there. And I said, you're not going to believe what happened to us on the way out to this conference. And I'm starting to tell the story, and these young people are hamming it up behind me, right? I mean, they're like bleeding on the side of the road, and they're like the Archbishop pontificating on down by. And everybody's chuckling and laughing at this contemporary Good Samaritan story, right? Until the laughter starts to die down, they realize the parable has become a mirror. And we finish, and it is dead quiet. And then the Archbishop gets up and says, mea culpa, mea culpa. We are so sorry. You see, we didn't realize that you all were one of us. And one of the teenagers stands up and says, you don't get it. There is no us. There is no them. We are all on the side of the road, and we all need each other to get where we want to go. The wisdom from young people, right? The Good Samaritan story, it has been known as the most well-known parable in all of the Gospels. The Good Samaritan actually has become synonymous with anybody who takes care of another person in need. In fact, the phrase Good Sam has become a trademark, right? It's an incorporated association devoted to roadside assistance. And as much as it is appropriate that we imagine the Good Samaritan as a beacon of compassion for persons who are in need on the side of the road, that doesn't really capture the real heart of what this parable is all about. And I think we lose it partly because it is so familiar. But what is really going on is this brilliant little sword play that is happening between Jesus and this lawyer that evokes a very radical challenge for them and for us. So let's just walk through the Good Samaritan story, right? So Jesus is his teacher. This is two-thirds of the way through Luke. He's already well known, right? He's been teaching, he's been healing. He's been healing on the Sabbath. He's been healing outcasts. He's been touching the lepers. He's been touching those ravaged by demons, women who are bleeding, people who are demoniacs, even a centurion's son, a soldier of the evil empire. He is caring for all of these people and saying things like the kingdom of God is open to all people and everybody's welcome at the table and we should love all people. He has commissioned 70 people who are trained in this movement, and they go out into the world, and they come back so excited because it's touching a nerve, and now he's gathered them all together, and he's teaching them. And there's a lawyer there who's had enough, right? See, this is not what we know the law to be. And so as Jesus is teaching with this crowd all sitting there, the lawyer stands up, a subtle little power play, but he's like bringing his authority. Hey, I'm here. I got a question for you. And this is really a face-off between this authority and Jesus. And the authority, he's got a little bit of arrogance. He says something like, take me as an example, right? The paragon of the law, the one who knows it in and out, who obeys every jot and tittle. Take me. What would I have to do to inherit eternal life? He's setting up a trap, right? So how is Jesus going to argue this? Is he going to try to argue on the basis of the law that everything he's teaching is really reasonable and legal? The lawyer knows he would have him in a heartbeat. He would just dice him up on those grounds. Or is he going to get Jesus to say that he is dissing the law entirely and be able to discredit him publicly and institutionally? What is Jesus going to do? He doesn't take the bait. He says, well, you're a lawyer. You read this all the time. What do you see when you study the law? The lawyer says, that's easy, right? Love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus says, great, that's all I'm talking about. Just go and do that. Now, some people see there's a little subtle dig there because Jesus is saying something to the effect of, you spend all your time in the study reading about the law. You know it in your head. So get out of your study and go do it right now. Embody it, and then you'll be doing what I'm talking about. But if there's a little diss, the lawyer, he's up to the task. He's undaunted. He says, well, just a minute, I have another question, right? This one to justify himself. Maybe he's a little embarrassed, or maybe he knows that he's got Jesus. He's arguing in terms of the law, and the lawyer knows the law inside and out. And the next question is going to corner Jesus in a box he can't get out. He says, okay, that's the essence. But tell me, who is the neighbor? Who is the one that we are supposed to care for in a time of suffering and in a time of need? And he's got Jesus. Because the law is very clear about who a neighbor is in that legal code. A neighbor is one of your own tribe. It is one of your own people. It is the people who believe like you, who dress like you, the other legal Jews. If you are outcast and untouchable, you are not under the same sanctions of that legal behavior. And worse, the Qumran scrolls say, if you are a child of Satan, you are not considered a neighbor worthy of any grace from God or humanity. So a neighbor is very clear. It's the people who are legal Jews. So what is Jesus going to say? Who is my neighbor? He says, let me tell you a story. Here's this bloody road, the most notorious, dangerous road in Israel, right? Coming from a canyon down from Jerusalem down into Jericho, very dangerous. And here's this merchant, somebody of some means, who's walking down, a Jewish man, and there's a crowd of robbers who come and beat him senseless. They leave him half dead. He's on the side of the road. No problem. There's a priest who's walking by. A priest, under the law, is required to care for somebody who is in need. Somebody even who is beaten unconscious and looks dead, you would be required to tend them even if they are dead. Now, for a priest, it might make him ceremonially unclean, so he would have to clean himself before he could do priestly duties, but he would still be legally required. But he gets as far away as he can, the other side of the road, and he walks past, right? But that's okay, a Levite comes by. A Levite who is absolutely, without any restriction, required to care for this one who's on the side of the road. But he gets as far away as he can, on the other side of the road, and walks on by. But then a Samaritan comes by. Now, to realize the punch, we have to remind ourselves of who the Samaritans are. Remember, in 8th century before Jesus, the Assyrians, the evil empire of the day, has come in and conquered the northern kingdom. And there are a batch of Jews, of course, who are trying to maintain faith, who are trying to keep and preserve their identity, preserve their race, preserve their religion. But there are a whole bunch of them who decide to start sleeping with the enemy. They give themselves over to the occupiers. They give up their gods. They give up their culture. They betray their race. They start to intermarry. They take on the customs and the practices of the Assyrian people. They become euphemistically called the half-breeds, the people who are betraying everything that we know, our identity, our values, everything that is sacred in the world. They are thumbing their nose for political expediency to survive in the midst of all this place while we are doing everything we can to maintain our identity. They have betrayed our core ideals. What we know is sacred. What we know is right. What our own future depends upon, they have completely dissed it. They're the Nazi sympathizers. They are worse than the empire. They should have been faithful, and they gave themselves up. And if we give them any credence, it could erode the very foundations of our own survival. There is so much hostility that it was okay within Jewish law for there to be raids in Samaritan communities, for there to be pillaging, for there to be rapes, for there to be burglary. After a while, the tensions die down a little bit until the Romans come back and another evil empire has now invaded the land and all these ancient hostilities are at fever pitch. In Jesus' own lifetime, when he was a teenager, it was so violent. The injustices against the Samaritan people were so pillaging, so raping, a group of Samaritans actually traveled to Jerusalem and poured buckets of blood into the temple as protest, which incited a whole other series of riots between these peoples. These are the detestable ones. These are the ones who truly are not just wrong. They are sacrilegious. They are dangerous. And Jesus says, a Samaritan comes walking by. And the Samaritan looks at this Jewish man lying on the side of the road, and he could see one of ancestors, people who have raped his daughters, who have invaded his communities, people who have illegitimated him for centuries. He could have looked at him and said, you deserve what you got, but that's not what happened. He sees him suffering on the side, and he says, enough, enough. His heart is moved with compassion. And then Luke goes into great detail as if to really help us get it, how much he cares. He goes over to him. He picks him up. He gives him oil on his wounds. He binds his wounds. He puts him on his donkey. He takes him to an inn. He gives him denarii to be able to feed him. He takes him to a room and tends him. He promises to come back, lines worth of how much compassion. And then Jesus does a brilliant thing. Remember, the lawyer asked him, so who is the neighbor? Who is the suffering person that I am supposed to take care of? Jesus doesn't ask, okay, so which was the suffering one in here? No. What he says is, which one of the three proved to be neighbor to the one on the side of the road? Which one of the three is the moral exemplar? Which one of the three embodies for us the essence of the law you hold so dearly? Which one of these is our real teacher and model right here? And the lawyer can't even say the name. He just says, that one that showed mercy. And Jesus says, yes, go and do that. Go and do what exactly? It's not so much go and tend to those who are on the side of the road, who are in need and suffering and show compassion. It's more radical than that. It's imagine the people who are our most dire enemies. The people whose political views, whose religious views, whose ways of life embody everything we know is wrong, who threaten our existence, the ones who are absolutely sacrilegious to what we hold dear, those ones, be the Samaritan, be the one who's willing to look past all the ideologies and see the other as a human being. Be the one to recognize that there is suffering hidden in every single political opponent. Be the one who's willing to recognize that there is goodness, there is care, there is even exemplary compassion possible in even the ones we most detest, we want to dehumanize, we want to demonize. Our world right now is walking down a bloody road. We are beating each other up around politics, around religion, around social issues. Each one of us has a group of people who embody for us everything that violates what we hold dear, what we hold sacred, that could threaten our very existence. And we feel justified in doing everything we can to silence them, to demean them, to deny them voice, to dehumanize them, to attack them, to not give them space in the public square. And we feel justified because what they stand for is so abhorrent and so dangerous. And does that wake them up? Of course not, because they feel exactly the same way. We are polarized against each other, pitted against each other, equally feeling justified in demeaning and dehumanizing the other side. And in the midst of all this, we're asking the question as a people of faith, are we really supposed to love even those people? What is love towards somebody who you detest and embodies what we know is absolutely wrong fundamentally to this world? What does love towards that one look like? And Jesus comes along and says, let me tell you a story. You may have heard about the Trump rally about a year and a half ago, and there was this black Muslim college student who wanted to go visit the rally and see for himself if all the vitriol and rhetoric was really as bad as it was being journalized. And he shows up to this rally, and of course he sticks out, and some of the Trump supporters there start yelling at him, and it gets a little bad and violent until finally a group of them just pounce this kid, and they beat this kid senseless and unconscious on the ground. But thank God, because there was a Hillary Clinton supporter who was there, and she was so in their face. This is everything that is wrong with you. You are thugs. You are against everything America stands for. You betray every value of who we are. And it became a shouting match that was so intense, security guards had to come over and escort her off of the premises. And still, that young man was lying on the ground, bleeding and senseless. But thank God, there was a Bernie Sanders supporter there, who had the whole thing video recorded on his phone. And he rushes to his hotel and he puts it on the internet. Hashtag Trump thugs. This is why they shouldn't be allowed to assemble. This is why they shouldn't be allowed to speak at all. This is why they should be denied all voice and power. Get them out of this world. It goes viral. But even as viral as it gets, that young man is still sitting on the side of the road, bleeding and senseless. And there was a Trump supporter with a ball cap, "Keep America Strong," a placard, "Make the immigrants go home." And he looks down and he sees that young man, and something in him says, "Enough. Enough." He tosses the placard. He kneels down. He takes his fatigue jacket and wraps him in it. He tends his wounds. He carries him into his pickup truck. He takes him to the ER. And he stays with him all night until the young man's family comes the next morning to be with him. And as he's leaving the hospital room, he just says to them, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all of it." And they say, "I'm sorry too." What is the real invitation of being the Good Samaritan? It's the one who's willing to look past all the polarities, to not see people as Republican or Democrat, left or right, blue state or red state, progressive or conservative, pro-life or pro-choice, gun control or gun reform, stronger borders, weaker borders, marriage equality, marriage sanctity, more military, less military, more government, more prisons. Somebody to say enough, enough. Let's be the Good Samaritan. Let's be the good Trump supporter. Let's be the one who embodies love and compassion for the other. Cross the street, cross the aisle, cross the political divide, and let's embody the gospel truth. There is no us. That's it. The gospel truth. There's no us. There's no them. We are all on the side of the road. And we all need each other to get where we want to go. Amen.